Democratic Animism Now show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we begin preparing for the equinox by cultivating deliberate, right? A wonderful word that comes from Libra, really the equinox, balance, and two verbs, libare, to liberate, and librare, to balance. So to be deliberate is to be in a state of liberating balance. And yes, we're dedicated to many things, whether the effective spiraling dance, that we can deliberately traipse now to the center of the storm, from which to waft lavender psilocybe mist, add your own ingredients into the memosphere, on behalf of all those in hot circumstance, to cool hot reactivity into effective spiraling response. So, Emma-Kayla Gaston and I are conjuring our Equinox online Kahoot. Details soon at coyotenetworknews.com. It will be September 21st, online, audio only, because radio and invisible is great. 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Her realms of Vudun, Orisha Sizzle, and our language crafting equinoctial to winter solstice guiding meta-narrative, whereby to discern and align with the against all odds desirable. I'm also dusting off Dion Fortune's guide, how she and the ritualists of Britain were engaged by the British government to ritually work protection of Britain from the Nazis. Against nothing, harm nothing, but animating the protectors of democracy. She said, the atmosphere of serenity in our homes, in our headquarters, for how else would we have been a nucleus of stability for the nation's soul? Anything for which we have a word, we have a relationship. So considering this work, experimental venues abound. We're all experimenting. Let every erg be an incentive to experimental liberation. So bringing old teachings alive in a liberating trickster customized to needs of now way. So in addition to Monday Night Trickster Council, I will be inaugurating every Tuesday, 4 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, October 5th through December 22nd, Zoom gathering with homework. This is boundaried enrollment for people who really want to do the play. Animating Trickster, Keeper of Democracy, more soon later at Coyote Network News. So, more than perfectly, we welcome collaborative ally Miguel Rivera, Keeper of Sacred Fire, to cool out conflagration, that we may spiral out of hot polarity by our dedication. One of his many worthy ventures and websites is futurearchitects.com. And we say to all of us, whatever we came to do, now would be good. You know, cultivating Earth citizenship by contributing our gifts and magnetizing liberating trickster to animate them. He has another wolfconnection.org, also important. Miguel is award-winning supervising sound editor for films and TV to the present. That's his great cover, who keeps the backstage sacred fires going in myriad expressions that we will get to. Poetry conferences, mentoring, vets retreats, youth retreats, running lodges for people in rehab. Welcome, Miguel.
Good afternoon, Carolyn, and greetings to all those that are tuned in for where you may be in the planet.
So, and I know you have beautiful opening and closing prayers, invocation, but just a little bit before. So I can't remember if it was when we met, but something that's always in my mind and I keep it in my heart. It was at the Great Mother Conference, and you were keeping a sacred fire going and a really authentic sweat. And you said you're keeping the fire going so when the storytellers aren't on stage, the characters have some place to hang out. And I
exactly
love that.
Yeah. In a way, it's like realizing that the work goes on all the time. It doesn't go to bed at 5 o'clock, you know, but the world keeps turning and somebody has to keep something going, taking care of the essence or the soul of whatever it is that we live, whatever place it is that we live in. So that's what that's about. Yeah. What I wanted to do is start today with a prayer or an invocation of energies. And some years ago, I was asked to do a wedding. And in the process, the parties involved, one of them were from different ethnic groups and different religions. And so the deal was how to make a prayer where nobody would be arguing with each other. So I thought about it, and I realized if I work my way backwards to the beginning, in all cultures all over the world, creation stories start the same way. In the beginning, there was nothing, right? So if I work my way back in that prayer for that particular ceremony or that day, who's going to argue with nothing? So with that in mind today, what I would like to do is begin with a part of a poem that was written by a friend of mine His name is Humberto Acabal, and he was a Maya Quiché from Guatemala. And the first stanza of the poem says this: roots tell us through the flowers what the earth is like on the inside. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to invoke a deep remembering of where we come from, not compromised, confined, constricted, immobilized, restricted by an ism, an ist, a belief system, a philosophy, or a tenet, and free, deep, and non-conditional relationships so we can go back to source. So I invoke that now for all of us, wherever you may be in this world. And I've been putting cedar down for us, making prayer to bring coolness and peace to wherever the fires are or wherever the storms are, so you may feel protected and blessed by this earth. So, how's that?
Oh, that's great. I like the silence afterwards, because I go, oh, right, that's right. Because remember, to the Greeks, silence was never uncomfortable, because out of it came Hermes. So that's great. And that's part of our backstage brewing to and fro with the guiding meta-narrative. Like I've been reframing, you know, how do we understand this election and this hot atmosphere, right? And how do we frame the story so we can be most effective participants and not contribute any further heat, right? Because Mars is now stationing retrograde. It's going on a vision quest to remember what Mars is really for. And it does go all the way retrograde. And the saying, and we can toss this back and forth, but the saying is that when Mars is retrograde, the aggressor always loses. And it's like, So it's very Sufi, Aikido, you know. And as you said, yeah, we're cooking everything back in the cauldron, everything back to its originating, liberating impulse before it was conditioned, before it was inquisitioned, before it was colonized, before it was the other, you know, and yeah. And partnering with that liberating impulse. So I like that the aggressor always loses. It might in Aikido it would be always true, but just that kind of spiraling and I thought, you know, we could join in the things that we might want to release. Well, when Mars is retrograde, aggressor always loses. And so I was pitching to my team going, well, what would be the positive version of that? When Mars is retrograde, everybody fill in the blank. Impossible desirable wolf participates in spiraling the world from fragmented polarity back into a dance of harmonious accord and mutual aid, or something like that. But I think part of what we can do with your sacred fire going now for us all is, you know, when we think about the future and the past, but we're tossing a lifeline into the future to animate the desirable. And just for the fun of it, you know, when Mars stations on Friday the 13th of November and goes direct, its image is nature spirits dance in the light of the sunset, surfing the spirit of the day. And I go, okay, we could be cheery, you know, if it requires that we liberate Mars within and without from the prisons of swagger, cruelty, vituperative harumphitude, ill will of any kind, high dudgeon, churlish, begrudging, you know, and all of us, right? I mean, just, and so we do get to go to the underworld to slough off all of that for self and world. I mean, you've done so much work with Mars, you know, initiating youth, troubled youth, veterans returning, you know, the working with Robert Bly for so long. What's the Mars that you align with, that you encourage returning to the world?
I think you have to think of him also as a protector, a defender of the home and the heart, for that matter, you know. And a lot of us don't have a sense that we are protected unconditionally, you know. I was in my 20s one time, and we got into a situation that was kind of dicey. And so I called up my teacher, my medicine man teacher, and I said, what do I do? And he said, come over here and I'll fix it. And we had a fly to Santa Fe and got into a sweat lodge. And he said this to us when we got into the lodge: whatever's going to come after you is going to have to go through me first. I had never heard anybody say that to me ever in my life. And I still remember, as I'm telling you this, what my body felt like to be protected unconditionally. and loved unconditionally. It was amazing, you know. And to this day, I feel that that's really an important thing for us to feel, is how to feel safely protected so that we can actually be here without feeling compromised, you know. So that's part of it. One is to recognize that as the role of the protector and nurturer in that sense, too, you know, and provider, you know. So that's the thing that we like to turn into.
That's great. No, and you're stirring memories in us all, undoubtedly. But I do remember once the head of music at our school, he really was the archdruid disguised as a music teacher. He gave us all paganism. But there was a moment where, I think it's like sixth grade or something, and some, you know, boy made a crude sexist joke of some kind. And Jack Langstaff leapt from the front of the room and said, never, ever, ever speak of women, girls in disrespect. And I was fearful for the lad, you know, but I'd never seen someone stand up. That's what you're talking about, going, oh.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And what we're also kind of cultivating is that quality of authenticity. He was a very stand-up guy. I mean, we're all befoibled, right? Because, but he was a very stand-up guy. That texture of authenticity, and that's, I think, you know, what we aspire to be. You know, it's the protection in the underworld, authenticity. And just for the frame story right now, Mars is stationing retrograde to go, as I would add, and to go off with all of us and with Miguel Rivera, going and positive, you know, as you're stirring, you know, positive protector Mars, you know, strong enough to be gentle. All life deserves safety in which to bloom, uniqueness, and we go, and there we go. And Jupiter, principle of curiosity and teachings and travel and blessings, it's the storyteller, you know, is stationing to go forward, which is outward into the world on Saturday night. So we're here at this interesting moment where Jupiter, what we pledge, what we animate, our inner dedication, you know, magnetizes this outward opportunity and incarnational actuality, just for the fun of it. We believe nothing, entertain possibilities, that's part of the rhythm now. And I think that's also, we get to slough off for ourselves any complicity in ourselves and in the world, you know, swagger and cruelty and vituperative harumphitude and ill will of any kind, right? And I do, when I was composing that list, you know, I was like, yes, Caroline, ill will of any kind, right? It's like, right, all past, you know, anything, right? Anywhere we scan the horizon and go, and it's like, no, cool that. Not to mean that we don't, because we are friends of the souls of power abusers, we're friends of their indictment, too. A friend quipped that, Trump is his own deep throat now, because there's also an atmosphere of, you know, deep secrets being revealed. It's like, yes, we are friends of everyone's soul and therefore friends of their indictment, because it's not good for anybody to get away with tyranny. There you go, you little bit.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
But it's a difficult time, like in this quest for truth, like musicians have a joke, you know, I've been a musician all my life. And so sometimes when you're lost, you got to go, where's the one? You know, that's the joke among musicians. And for us, it's really hard right now to figure out where the truth really is, because there's so much divergence from anybody guarding the truth. You know, our institutions are basically have been compromised for a long time, so we can't fairly rely on them. Look at the academic institutions, look at the religious institutions, and I'm not saying that they're all corrupt, but there's a certain way in which all of them never practice the tenets by which they say they believe in, you know? So to me, there's an incongruency and incoherence in the culture from what's on the surface to what's really bubbling underneath. When I was reading, I was rereading the introduction to A Hero with a Thousand Faces, because I was preparing myself for this, and one of the things that he talked about in the 30s, in Europe, this is before World War II, he was saying the only way to solve this issue is by going inside, going interior. You cannot do exterior. And the first thing you come against when you go inside is all the nightmares and all the monsters that are hiding under the bed, in the cupboards, in the closets. So this is what we have to go for, is what are the monsters that are hiding under the bed and in the cupboards, you know? And this is what we need to find out, to extirpate those from the memory and reclaim that territory. It's sanctity for the soul, you know? So how do we re-sanctify ourselves in that way as a culture and as individuals, you know?
And that's a perfect book to bring up. Yes, that was the first book I read as a little teen going, that's an educated person. That's very admirable, Aries Mars guy. A positive use of Mars, he was.
Yeah.
And we had a little correspondence and a little bit of teaching. And again, we're all befoibled. But, you know, so let me put this to you, too. I love Joseph Campbell. You know, and James Hillman and our Robert Bly there in the mythic realms still here, you know, and especially I think with maybe Jung and Joseph Campbell and Hillman, so many of our mentors, and we're guided to look at our mentors, right, and they bubble up, and they found the keys. But they didn't all necessarily put the keys in the lock, right? And I think that's handed to us, right? Going, here's some great keys, here's some secondary references, here's alchemy, that's a great thing, you know, here you go, a bunch of keys. And everything right now in the kind of guiding story, like Jupiter teachings is in Capricorn going, is it useful? What would it mean to practice this, to tease this into, you know, incarnational actuality, all these words. Well, we were talking about that in you know, putting standards of, you know, different teachers out there, not being grumpy about anybody particularly, but you said, you know, for the teachers or whatever they're doing, you know, remember to put it back into the earth, right? To really embody.
A friend of mine used to say this: if your philosophy doesn't grow corn, I don't want to know about it. And I think as a culture right now, we're incredibly avarice for information. We know thousands of facts, but we never metabolize them into the body or into our practice. So I think our cultural RAM is super, super saturated. So what we have to begin to work, exercise this information. And to me, information chewed up, digested, metabolized, eventually will become knowledge. Knowledge chewed up, digested, used up, metabolized, eventually will become wisdom, and we have to work towards that. Like, for instance, I was asked to go downtown about 2.5 months ago during the height of the protest to make a prayer in front of about 400 or 500 people. And so what was really important for me is to figure out how to create a message that would be relevant to the times. And so what I said to the individuals there gathered, I said, we're here today because our ancestors did not know how to get along with each other. And so are we here today so that we can pass information to our descendants so they don't have to be in the same situation that we're in today? So that said, I realized it's okay for people to be angry. It's okay for people to be afraid. It's okay for us to have anxiety and even depression for that matter or anything that negative that comes up. What is not okay is to hang on to it or take it out on ourselves or on each other. And to me, that one of the biggest transformers of all these negative energies is the earth. Everything has to get put back into the earth. The earth has the power to transform these energies, you know, and we need to express that. One of the things that we have as human beings, we have an incredible disconnect from the world around us. Humans are not reciprocal in a lot of ways with the earth. We don't put ourselves into the earth in any form or another. And so the way I look at it is we've taken ourselves out of the food chain. So we have to go back into the food chain in some capacity and begin to let the universe know that we want to participate. We're not the only species that counts. There are many other species that count, and not only in this world, but in this universe. And so we have to look at that we're not the only ones that have consciousness or exclusive control over this place, but it's about relationships. So we're changing the paradigm from a vertical to a web-based configuration. And what do we have to do? We have to radically alter our belief systems or change them in such a way so that they're more congruous and coherent with each other, you know.
And then what I'm increasingly loving, you know, is, you know, democratic animism now, that animism, not a belief, it's a manner of relating, and it can start off experimental as we're recovering it, because it just used to be the default setting of, hi, hello, leaf, hello, thing, hello, oh, you know, spicy serpent, yes, I would give you respect instead of the way, oh, this way. And see, right now, and you're so dancing with the times, but Uranus, trickster, nature's evolutionary genius, is stationing at 10 Taurus, which is about small acts of grace and magic, tweaking everything around us, you know, little plants, little animals, little creatures, like, hello, hello. I love a friend says she likes to work with old ladies' houses to tweak the house until it sings, right? And it's like just these little tending things, these little, you know, and that's a mode of, again, of Mars, you know, tender solicitude. Let's ladle this out, like, hi, how are you? There you go. But strong and boundaried and safe, right? That's right. Because we all think that innocence is going to get, Bambi's going to get murdered by Godzilla. But we go, innocent dignity of child heart with strong woofy boundaries and capacity to spiral, you know, all this thing. But, yes, wherever we were going with that, you remind me. Okay, but one of the things that I've always I was gonna just bail out into some spiral here. But one of the things I've always admired is that when I met you, Miguel, and there was the fire where the characters in the story could hang out while the storytellers weren't speaking on stage. I found that so charming and authentic and true. I'm like, oh, that's great. And the sweat lodge that you ran was like, oh, you know, that which is authentic is really liberating. Oh, what a relief. Because I've been to bogus ones. We've all been to bogus ones where you know, the con man and the versus the liberating trickster and authenticity. And it was part of our, we might put on the table, you know, sort of putting standards of discernment for the huge amount of illusion and delusional conspiracy and not and stories and framing and whatever out there. And it's like, okay, certain standards. I'll pick one and you can pick another, right? You know, and I go, if it's polarity, if it's we are sane people and those are lizard people, I go, no, that's really not useful. That's colonial.
No.
That's colonialism in its sneaky, viral form. We are enlightened special, but no, you don't. And it's got to be a willingness to we, right?
No, exactly. And the whole thing about that is that there is no us in them. It's all us, you know, and that to me is really, and I've seen that over and over again. People are refusing to acknowledge that. There is no us in them. And as difficult as that is, all those aspects, because they're not in relationship, become polarized, you know, and this is what you see now, you know, this incredible polarization. But if you have an issue, you know, one of my teachers, we were, I've done a number of ceremonies over a period of 40 years, you know, and one of them is I participated in a Sundance. And the Sundance is a four-day-long ritual where you fast and you pray and you dance for 4 days, and then you figure out what happened after. And you talk about it afterwards. You pray for 4 days, and then whatever's left over, then you figure it out. But when we were my third year dancing, you know, we built the arbor, and it's about 150 feet in diameter. And so we stood on one side of the arbor looking east. We were on the west gate looking east, and the intercessor said, take a good look. We stood there for about 15 or 20 minutes, you know, and then in silence, and he goes, follow me. And we walked to the exact opposite side, to the east gate, looking west, and he said, take a good look. And then all he said after that was, same arbor. And so basically, you realize, oh, the teaching is that we have to be able to learn how to put something, and this is what's troubling us, in the center, and look at it from all points of view, and seeing what is the best possible solution at this time. Maintaining the idea or holding the thing in mind, right, in place, that it's all part of the configuration, the opposites, right? But because they're in relationships, they're not toxic to each other. They're not damaging. And this is what we have to figure out, how to create relationship. When we were talking about earlier this morning, there's a beautiful piece on YouTube. There's a debate between James Baldwin and William S. Buckley Jr. in Cambridge in 1962, 63. I can't remember what it is, but it's such a beautiful display of elegant dialecticals, you know, when you turn really hardened positions into a resolution where you can actually figure out how to be related, even though you come from very diametrically opposed sides of opinion, you know. And that, to me, this is where we need to go today, figure out how to create dialogue. And a lot of people are not interested in creating dialogue. They're interested in relationship. And that, to me, is a toxicity that we have to be able to eliminate in the culture, you know? So,
well, the underworld is throw it, give it to me. Like, all right, we are humbled. We can't do it by ourselves. No, but you told me about that this morning, and then I go, wait a minute, I did see that James Baldwin and William F. Buckley at Cambridge, and it's really antique. It's really an interesting experience because it's all these, you know, white Cambridge University toffs, right? But who are very reverential, you know, and Baldwin does a smoking, spicy, strong, articulate thing.
Totally.
And I thought William F. Buckley really got smoked. I mean, I thought he really got smoked in that one. It wasn't like an equal thing exactly, and the audience certainly felt that way because in terms of the Mars, he just got kind of mean. And see, James Baldwin never did. James Baldwin was spicy and fierce and defined, you know, but not mean. He was like, phew! And it was liberating. It was, you know, blazing intelligence, even when it's coming at you, is liberating.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, so that was really great. And and then, you know, I told you about a friend sending, you know, a really useful video. There's a lot of crackpot crazy, you know, time eating. There's a word actually. Something fragic, tempo fragic, time eating activities. You know the conversations about spirituality and Nazis and things. And it's like it's okay, it's good, but it can chronofragic. It eats time. You know, but there's some really great narrative parts of ourself, right? Talking, and one is this, you know, good old boy for real, Bo from you know, rural Florida, but he's he said. Briefly, he said, you know, voting is the least effective form of participating, but it's the least we can do. And then he really does animate mutual aid. And he goes, well, think of, you know, people you know, maybe not so well, you know, but who would, especially with the fires and the cataclysm and the everything, who would help somebody with this, with that, with a pothole needs filling, oh, we'll do it, you know.
Yes.
You could petition the government, or you could just do it yourself. So he briefly said, you know, his affinity group, he said, is made up almost entirely of left-leaning, anti-authoritarian, you know, anarchists and right-wing, small government conservatives, right? And it is a time for curious alliances. When I went to New Orleans after Katrina, the only effective team was right-wing evangelicals and left-leaning permaculture hippies from Berkeley working together, providing soup and hot showers and community. So, and see, I loved what he said because it spirals us out of the polarity. We'll go back into election and all those things, but you go, well, we have our networks that are actual friendship, right? Not who you're voting for, just actual who will help you out, you know. And that's networks we must develop because it's what's coming at us is so we do need that. And then you have government, and my dad was a New Dealer under FDR, so I think government can do good things, you know, New Deal, right? But it's over there, and sometimes the networks cooperate with it, but not rely necessarily. Yeah, anyway, so it just broadens the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it does. And you have to realize, I mean, I look at this like many people are angry because they're in pain, right? And they're in pain because something happened to their original configuration, you know? And so we have to get through all the different layers to actually get to the core of your being, you know, to be able to figure out what happened to the love, you know, because that's the bottom line. I have a couple of short stories for you. I was doing a wedding, another wedding story here. This couple that I know, his father is black. His father is Jewish. His mother was black, right? And he's marrying a girl of Lebanese and possibly some Arab descent. I don't know what it was. And I realized I'm looking at three different ancestries there that have been historically at odds with each other for a long time. But now you have to love. Love has brought this about so that everybody has to look at the children from this union with love, you know. And I've seen that happen many, many, many times. I was telling you this morning. Another friend of mine who was a radical, he was a Brown Beret here in L.A. during the 60s and the 70s, and he vowed never to have anything to do with anybody from another race. His daughter ends up marrying a white guy, right? These are his words, not mine. And he said, I'm holding my first grandchild, and here's the kid with blonde hair and blue eyes, and I cannot help but love him, no matter what I've been through all my life. So I think we have to figure out how to get through all the biographical events in our lives that have compromised the core of our being in order to really sanctify it. And when we do that, we effectively defragment the culture in a way that it's unnecessary to have all these different sections. We don't need another. I was writing this in my preparing for my notes. You know that Pink Floyd song, "We Don't Need Another." We don't need an education. I said, we don't need another faction. We don't need more factions. I think we need to
get that's true. No, well, hold that thought, because that's a worthy thought for the foreseeable future. We're going to take a very short break with our usual Taj Mahal to guide us. And our wonderful, perfect for now ally guest is Miguel Rivera, keeper of sacred fire to cool out the conflagration. We'll play more with that, and we'll be right back.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Chanty, chanty, come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show and Democratic Animism. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, and our guest today is Miguel Rivera, longtime ally. We kahooted, I think, at the Great Mother Conference. I think that's pretty much what we've done, but it feels like more. It feels, oh no, we've seen each other other places. Wait, Mexico, things. Wait, yeah. I can't. Right, and a great.
I don't know, right?
That's right. Yeah, back to the 18th dynasty. We don't know. But things that we admire, because we're all invited to kind of customize, like, how do we want to be, you know, at this opportune time of descending into the initiatory underworld with the underworld spa service, where we can scrub away any conditioned thing, you know, and then customize, like, what do we want to be? So what I did admire of many things, Miguel, is I could see that you were seeing everything, the good and the sketchy, coming down as it does in a community, and not entangling with it like at all, the sketchy, right? Blessing the good.
Yeah.
And just getting, yeah. Say what?
No, I said that's true. That's one of our teachings, is that basically it is our job not to add to the confusion of the planet.
That's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good. Yeah, and it's, I mean, all of these things, you know, we're all customized, you know, sometimes we respond, but that's why it's so useful now at Miguel's backstage fire, where all the characters and ourselves as well can hang out before we resume the story Saturday night when Jupiter goes direct, and going, well, what do we want to be? What do we want the effect of ourselves to be? And we go, you know, to self and liberated, liberating, you know, it's a good time now to... Oh, this is the way I want to be. Oh, spirit of sacred fire, you know, hold me to this, right? And the honoring of fire, is fire always been one of your sacred allies?
Always. I mean, I grew up the city where I was. I'm from Guatemala originally, and every other mountain in Guatemala is a volcano. So you are very close to fire, primordial fire, all the time. And so one of the things that I learned is that it's accessible to you, but you have to really respect it. And for me, for instance, one of the first things that we did, that we had to do when we started learning ceremonies, is how to take care of fire. And fire is the core, at the core of everything. You know, it brings about when fire comes together with water, and these and the stories that were passed on to me that way is when the matter comes. And when fire touches matter again, life comes. You know, so we always go back to the beginning of things, the beginning of life in some form or another. To me, what's interesting about fire is people don't know. I had a friend who studied with an esoteric organization here in LA called the Aquarian Study Centers. And we started having a conversation one time, and he said, you know, we started talking about you know, Lemurian fire, Atlantean fire, Dogon fire, Egyptian fire, Greek fire, this fire, that kind of fire. And I said to him, did you guys ever go out and build a fire? And he said, no. And I just about fell out of my chair. And I go, how can you? To me, the fire is not just a metaphor. It's not just a symbol. It's not just an academic position, but it's a living, breathing element that's an archetypal energy that has to be related to in some form or another, metabolized, you know? So I have to have a relationship with fire. To me, fire is also an ancestor, you know, and it's also a source of life and a source of light. But fire by itself has to be cannot survive because it's dangerous. So you have to balance it with all the other elements. If you go that route, you know, fire, water, earth, and air, all in proper relationship, it makes for a much more complex and more balanced system, you know, that's not so toxic and consuming.
Well, yes, toxic and consuming. You know, all of our allies in much of the world, Northern California, Oregon, Washington State, some parts near where you are in Southern California. So how shall we... well, you know, I mean, there are really hip fire responders that I've spoken to.
Hi there.
Oh, yeah.
And they do, see, again, part of the coming out from the Inquisition is for everybody's animism to uncringe and unfurl, right? I mean, indigenous people never had that part, cringing, you know, but it's in everybody. And you know, so many fire responders and policemen will go, you know, don't tell my buddy, but I had this incredible experience in my thing. And
yeah,
don't tell other people because they'll think I'm crazy. But, you know, you got to listen to the fire. It's got a story. And some of them really are demonic, you know, but each one has a character. And you need to know the story of the fire. And we don't speak about this because people would think we were crazy, but it's all living, right? And you know, for you with fire, you know, to invite it into, we're in the Virgo season right now, which is small things, Virgo ruler of ritual magic, micro to macro, and at different times when somebody on our council's house was surrounded by fire, and we go, all right, without presumption or causality or deriving status or any whatever, it's like everybody who's got a little candle, you know, light that and go, fire, fire, you are wonderful in this small realm. You are wonderful in this small realm. We will aspire to be more reverent, you know. And the person, our great ally, said, oh, the fire around my house has just, you know, got calmed down, gone out.
So we
don't know. But I know Santero friends and you know, again, the weather magic, without presumption, without status, without being, you know, I'm a great huza, you know, whatever shaman thing, none of that. All credentials into the cauldron, you know, because that's part of the conversation now. It's not performance, it's magic, right? It's not a hungry ghost.
Yeah.
It's not, because that was part of our conversation about, you know, cults of personality and charismatic megafauna.
Yeah.
And how it wants, you know, it's not performance, it's magic. And I think we're all working on this, you know, before, you know, I do a private session with somebody or, you know, a talk, you know, my friend Jay, ancestor, hi there, would say, you know, free me from ego magic and fill me with the healing spirit, you know, and then I would add that I can name with head, heart, and instinct all that this person needs named for greater health, happiness, and contribution to the community. And so remind, it's not performance, it's not look at me, how cool and insightful I am. It's like, no. It's very sneaky, right? It's like, no.
Yeah.
You know, or wasn't that a smart insight? No. It's not, that's not what it's for. And I did say to you that, you know, when Robert Bly's Great Mother Conference, I came to love him as a charismatic megafauna, but maybe that's the end of that. I mean,
it's possible, yeah, I think, but it, you know, it really depends on how we are with each other. I mean, I have a story. There was a very prominent leader I will not mention, and I was at a wedding. I know that I have a lot of, I have learned a lot by doing weddings over the last 40 years, you know, but. And this very particular prominent leader was very charismatic, but he was a control freak. And so
often the case.
Was spoken to me by somebody. Huh?
Well, never mind me. I was just thinking, often the case. Yeah, control freak.
Yeah, often the case, right. But anyway, and he said, I said, tell me something about this guy, because he was a very famous, you know. And I said, tell me something that nobody knows about this guy. And he said, listen, he was a control freak. And he had a cadre of young lions around him that would do anything for him. And he said one by one, they left him because he would not empower them to take over. And so he died a bitter, angry old man, and his teachings died with him. So I think what this points to the fact is that we have to be incredibly fluid, or to use the words that are being, that are buzzing about right now, neuroplasticity, you know, neurogenesis and everything. We have to be able to regenerate. My teachers in particular, they were both, one was a Creek, Muskogee Creek medicine man, the other one was a Lakota ritual elder, right? And they were both, they said the same thing in two different ways. One of them said, don't ever be a Methodist. And the other one said, learn this really well because next time it's going to be completely different. But they were talking about the fact that we have to learn how to be flexible with how the mystery is the mystery. And when it presents itself, we have to be able to recognize it in whatever shape or form it comes in. And form, to me, is not necessarily reflect that. Form is necessary. You have to be able to have form. But otherwise, you can't cultivate how to hold place. But you also have to be fluid enough to adjust to what the needs of the moment are, you know? So if you're going to make ceremony, you're going to make prayer in this way, if you don't have all the elements or you're not in the place where you are, so you have to use what you can, however you can use it. You know, that was the other rule. Whatever we can get, however we can get it, that's what we're going to use. But you have to be incredibly fluid. And it's like you talk about systems of belief that are set in place, tenets of belief. You know, there's a big difference between commandment and instruction, right? Commandment denotes no flexibility, no plasticity, no fluidity, whereas instruction, it's always adjustable to whatever the needs of the moment are. And if you're so insistent on form, you're going to miss the essence that shows up to be part of it, you know? So that to me is really critical, learning how to tell the difference between the two and how to adapt it, and that way it doesn't get ossified or calcified, right, or obstructed, so.
Right. And our sort of feeling wise animal body knows, wait a minute, is this authentic? Is this whatever? And you know, and when you said, you know, incredibly charismatic teacher, and I go, well, yes, and let's go back to the meaning of the word, because charisma comes from charis, from which we get charitable and Eucharist and Amelia, dedicated heart. So true charisma is a charitable heart, right? Not swagger. Right. So we're addressing. Well, yeah, I think it's a good one to aspire to, right? It's like, now let us all throw swagger into the cauldron and ladle out, you know, a kind heart. And that's the challenging medicine. But we see people like Nelson Mandela. I mean, people have done this, you know, and New Orleans is very big on this too, which is in Jamaica, deep, deep investigative delving into horrific corruption with a kind heart that comes back to we're all in this thing together. The spicy critique, the savviness about how we're being played is sacred and important part of that whole thing. And then to bless it anyway, in a fierce blessing, you know, for everybody. So that's a great thing. Yeah. So fragmentation, like whatever. And see, we have a, what's called a mutable T-square right now. So there's enormous amounts of cuckoo information coming out there. And, you know, we're all befoibled, and I've certainly blown it on occasion in social media. But I have come up with a few, you know, when confronted by somebody, we'll just say completely polarizing crackpot, you know, antagonistic theory. I just go, may the winds of democracy sweep away all delusion. And everyone's cool with that. I just invite us to play in that realm, going fundada, you know, and may it be that, you know, because it doesn't go and you're a dingbat. It goes no, and we'll know soon. We'll leave it to the winds of democracy as to what's standing, you know, afterwards.
Yeah.
But it is a time when symbols are literalizing, like.
Yeah.
It's very witty. No one was hurt. The floundering, the four. Trump boats that sank in the regatta outside Austin, Texas, on a big lake.
They sank
themselves, right? Because they're like, put on as many flags as possible and then churn around. The lake was calm, but it was their motion that created these giant waves that capsized everybody. And it's like, okay, the myths are very literal, and the gods were kind. Nobody was hurt. You know, that's, I think that's a part of our blessing. You know, harm none.
Yeah.
But and then there was a very witty. We can post it, whatever, and you know, which was just a fabulous image of Poseidon and emerging from the floundering boats, going Poseidon for Biden. And yes, I know in the listening audience, people are going Biden, and it's like yes, but just throw your harumphitude into the cauldron.
Yeah,
you know, we're just working with everything. See him being better than he is, or whatever. But right now it's blessing. You know, it can be. Fierce blessing. I mean, I work with, because I like Dorothy Parker saying, I wake up every morning and I brush my teeth and sharpen my tongue. And it's like, yeah, I want to keep that too, you know, but with a fundamental, like, is it fundamentally liberating? And, you know, that's the aspiration. There we go. So.
Yeah. Before I switch my mind, I wanted to go back to one more thing because we were talking about the fire. And to me, all these fires are an invitation to bring in everybody's grief. I've seen it happen because we feel a tremendous amount of grief, but we don't express it. So I encourage people to put that grief into the earth again, to feed the earth that way. You know, I have an interesting story about this. Years ago, I was two different funerals. One of them, I was watching my mother's young sister be buried, you know, and she was embalmed in a metal coffin being put down into a concrete enclosure, and something in me was going and I could see the roots of the grass and the trees there wanting to get at this body, but they couldn't, you know. And then the other one is a friend of mine passed away many years ago, and her ashes, one of her wishes was to put the ashes in the middle of her yard. And she had, over the years that she'd been in this house where she lived in, she had all kinds of flowering trees and shrubs and bushes, so that she wanted to know that the husband she was leaving, she wanted to know him to know that all those flowers that eventually would be eating, all those plants would be eating her ashes. So anytime any of those plants flowered, he'd be seeing part of her in those flowers, you know. So that's participation with the earth in a very unconstricted way, and how to feed the earth in some form or another. And that kind of reciprocity is invited, and I think that it brings a lot of healing. And in particular, our grief, the grief for where we are right now, not only for ourselves as humans, but what's happening to the world, you know. And part of it is an invitation to express it and not to hold it in, you know. So do it. Do it in some form.
So. Well, there is an abundance. And I think, you know, part of your craft, you know, is... you know, grief cooked into expressive art becomes a sacrament of kinship. And there is so much grief in people. Well, animals and creatures and things, just the whole thing, just in ashes, the cauldron. So there is so much grief and so much keening, you know, which animals do. And you know, just everybody, you know, all of it, all part of one conversation. A friend driving down from Oregon decided, like, let's go to the coast, to the beautiful rainforest there. Oh, it's not there anymore. It's been destroyed by fire and massive planting of things that are dying, and the weeping. Yeah, so people have been leaving places weeping. And there is, you know, solace, and how can we be of solace to each other, and how can that grief, well, there's a lot of that in the social movements, how can that grief find its voice and its power? It's like the Idle No More and the women in Belarus who are doing a very spirally, you know, okay, we're dedicated to the fight, you know, but that's really hot, you know, but they're dedicated to the dance, meaning you're there, and then when the oppositional scary Saturn comes, they dissolve and then they reform, you know, and like Idle No More in, you know, parking lots and stores, you know, singing powerful beauty.
Yeah.
You know, bypassing people.
To me, the invocation of beauty through the arts, you know, it's a necessary, absolutely necessary to do that. I think in times of trouble, left to our own devices, take away the politics, the religions, all the institutions, you know, left to our own devices, humans would figure out how to make shelter, how to find food, and how to protect each other, you know, simple. It's that way. So there's a level at which we have to be not reduced, but called forth to our essence, you know, and then it brings out our humanity. Because there's a tremendous amount of compassion that people have in them, capacity to care. But if you've never been taught how to love, never been taught how to protect, then you don't know how to go there. And I think it's possible to get there, you know, even with people that are incredibly stubborn and recalcitrant. I learned something, I learned a new word, the meaning of a new word. I've heard obstreperous for years, right? We finally look up the meaning of obstreperous, and it means basically noisy and difficult to control. So our obstreperous nature has to be basically be dealt with in some form or another, so we can figure out how to bring relationship into our lives, you know, not only with ourselves, but with the world around us and those and the other species around us.
Well, maybe we need to invite the obstreperous, ornery, disobedient quality of American culture into a heroic role. Come, we need obstreperous, you know, here. We need you to help build Stonehenge and the Green Deal.
Yeah.
Here, come on, you don't got some work to do? We got work for you. Yeah, because you mentioned the 1930s somewhere you mentioned the 1930s. So the last time Uranus was in Taurus was the late 30s Germany, right? And so Germany got Nazism and America got the New Deal, and now it's the reverse. We want to keep that spiraling, but that's a whole lot of the conversation, you know, that's going on that is worthy. It just needs distilling, and it can be chronophagic, New Age spirituality and Nazism, and it's like, well, okay, but I've been, you know, since 1971, I've been really aware of and proclaiming periodically, 1930s Germany, there was a lot of astrology, yoga, chakra balancing, you know, Hindu practice, you know, I mean, all of that there was, but it was either snookered into supporting, you know, vituperative polarity and creepiness, oblivious. And so it's like, it's one of those categories. Just because you've taken ayahuasca 40 times, just because you do it, does not necessarily guarantee sanity.
I am so in agreement with that. It's like, you know, because people, when they take it in that form, they don't realize that they're taking in an incomplete system of beliefs, you know?
Oh, well, that's fun. Say more about that.
Well, I went and heard there was a Hopi elder called Thomas Banyaka, who used to go around in the 70s and the 80s. By that time, he was already like 80 or 90 years old. And Banyaka, when I heard him speak, he said that the Hopi knew to the day when the Spaniards were going to arrive. And so from what I remember how he described it, the elders were sitting there on a hilltop, one of those mesas in Arizona, looking down. And then they saw the column of the Spanish approaching. And they just shook their head and they said, oh, this is nothing but trouble. We can't do anything about it. And what he just said, what they saw was this. They saw a cross on top of a staff. And then to them, a cross without a circle is an incomplete system of beliefs, right? And he said that is a dangerous, because it's a polarized element without its counterbalancing elements in relationship to it. So it's going to come in like a rogue tornado or firestorm or something and create a lot of damage because it's not in relationship to all the things around it, you know. So that, to me, is a representation of fire coming in and not taking into relationship air, water, and or earth to be in relationship to it, so it's out of balance. And the funny thing about ayahuasca, you know, and people don't understand that if you're going to do that, you have to go down to the jungle and immerse yourself into that whole consciousness and understand what the responsibilities are of that. And I think people are lazy. They're inherently lazy. They don't want to do the work. What is it? The sayings are, you know, before enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. After enlightenment, chop wood and carry water. People don't want to do the work, you know. And if you don't get it that way, you're never going to get it. And it doesn't matter what you do. And there is no magic. There is no magic wand. Sometimes it does happen. But I think you have to put in the work.
Being a languid, lollygagging Libran on occasion, I want to speak up for mushrooms are much more forgiving.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we help you no matter what. Even if you haven't fasted and fiercely and gone to the jungle and whatever. No, here, feel the embrace of the magic. Feel the increased perception of, feel the kinship. It's like, feel that what we hope is true really is true. Here's, as Stamets says, you know, it calms down the amygdala, increases cooperation in all the regions of the brain, and increases curiosity, confidence, and kindness. And it's like, it's very kind and forgiving. You can be lollygagging and half do the work, and it will inspire you to do the work, right? But it's not grumpy. But yes, no, I love when you said without the circle, the cross without the circle. Well, it's Mars with no Venus, right? And all the astrological symbols are crosses and circles and all. So yeah, we would want that. But again, the cooling out, the you know, what did everything want to be before it got snookered and hoodwinked, you know? And people so want a story that brings out and invites their mythological heroic selves, and that's very often where people get hoodwinked by their desire to not be hoodwinked. Okay. So we just put out, you know, but it's like, but the hunger is right, you know, but that's what gets people into the KKK too, that to be, I want to be a grand wizard and an exalted cyclops. And it's like, no, that's the toxic mimic of mythology.
Right.
Here's the real mythology. So we're winding down, but I know you have a closing poem to us.
And I think that, anyway, do you want me to go to that now or?
Yes, I think so. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So going back to the beginning, I asked everybody to think of themselves as root, right? And to going into the bottom of the, to the core of the earth, and how are you going to see yourself as a flower? So this is a poem that has been with me, again, from Humberto Acabal. I'll read it in Spanish first and then in English. Hace tiempo. Hace mucho, mucho tiempo que te amo, con ese amor escondido de las raíces que aman con toda la fuerza de la tierra hasta reventar en flor. It's been a while. For a long time, a long, long time, I have loved you. With the hidden love of roots that with all of the power of the earth love until they burst into flower. So my prayer or my request or invocation it is for all of us that have been tuned in here today is to love like the roots love until you burst into flower in your life, whatever that may be. However you see yourself manifest as a flower connected to essence. So thank you, Carolyn, for taking the time to spend time with me today and all your audience for being willful participants in this little ride through consciousness and imagery.
That's perfect. And metaphoric agility, neuroplasticity, no rules but guidelines. You know, thank you. Thank you so much, great ally Miguel Rivera. And thank you always, Kirsten Thomas, wonderful board op. I'm Caroline Casey. There will be more adventures available posted at coyotenetworknews.com, and we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team. Thank you again, Miguel.